Failure is not an option.
What difference at this point does it make?
Nobody said it was going to be fun.
This is Real Talk, a fearless, poignant, and intrepid show where truth speaks louder than words. This is Real Talk with your host, Audrey Russo.
The shame, not of this world, so we live on the run. We keep our eyes set, eyes on what is to come.
It happened before. It will happen again. It's just a question of when.
Time's a luxury we don't have.
This is Robert Spencer, the director of Jihad Watch and the author of The Politically Incorrect Guide to Islam and the Crusades and The Truth About Muhammad. And you are listening to Audrey Russo on Real Talk.
Welcome back. If you're just joining us, this is Audrey Russo, and you're listening to Real Talk. Dietrich Bonhoeffer once said, "Silence in the face of evil is itself evil. God will not hold us guiltless. Not to speak is to speak. Not to act is to act." The West has become precisely that, evil, concerning their silence on the Islamic war on Christians. And we're going to find out what we are not hearing concerning the plight of Christians in the Middle East with my next guest. For my new listeners, Raymond Ibrahim is, among other distinguished positions, a Shulman Fellow at the David Horowitz Freedom Center and a CBN News contributor. He's a guest lecturer at universities and governmental agencies, and he's testified before Congress regarding the abstract failures that govern American dialogue concerning Islam. He's also the author of several books, including The Al-Qaeda Reader and his latest release, Crucified Again, Exposing Islam's New War on Christians. It's my great pleasure to give a Real Talk welcome back to Raymond Ibrahim. Hey, Raymond.
Hi, Audrey. Good to be back with you on Real Talk.
Thanks. It's great to have you back with us. And we always have so much to talk about. We're going to jump right in. Last time you were with us, we talked about Italy since the 1980s, that they've had a growing Islamic problem. You shared about a Muslim teen beating a Christian schoolgirl for wearing a crucifix. And we've talked about the Islamic footprint in Italy, especially Sicily. Now, this, of course, has nothing to do specifically with Italy, but it does have to do with Islam. Muhammad did have a problem with the crucifix, but it appears it's not just the crucifix, but the Christian cross itself that Islam has a problem with. Is that correct, Raymond?
That's absolutely correct. Islam, the reason Islam has an issue with the Christian cross is because in one symbol it completely embodies the fundamental disagreement between Christianity and Islam. Islam, of course, you know, holds Jesus or Isa as a prophet and who was born of a virgin and who's coming back on Judgment Day and so forth, but it denies that, A, he was crucified, that he died, and that he came back, that he was resurrected. And so the cross in many ways really flies in the face of Islamic teachings And as you indicated earlier, this really started with Islam's prophet Muhammad, who had an abhorrence for the image of the cross, who would destroy it. If anything, if two objects just crossed each other in any place, he would just destroy it. There's an anecdote where he told someone to take that filth off, someone who apparently a Christian back in those days was wearing a cross in Muhammad's early career, and so forth. And then the rest of Islamic history is actually is based on what we just discussed about Muhammad. So you look at the early texts about the conflicts between the early Islamic armies fighting with Christian armies. There's always attacks on the cross. There's a you hear the Islamic State today or ISIS. If you listen to their communiques to the West, they say continuously things like "We're going to break the cross." And in fact, that statement comes back from early Islamic history, because the early Islamic jihadis would say the same thing. They would tell the Byzantines or the Christian Roman Empire to destroy their crosses to enter into Islam. That's the only way to have peace. And so, there's a long paper trail of animosity, Islamic animosity, towards the Christian crucifix for these reasons. And, fast forwarding to what you're referring to in Italy, the story is basically an African Muslim boy, or a Muslim boy from Africa, who's an immigrant to Italy, is in an Italian school, and he starts picking on an Italian, indigenous Italian, obviously a Catholic girl, for wearing the crucifix. He starts taunting her, and he ends up by punching her very violently. And the thing is, if you read the report, it's sort of dismissed. He's a minor. Who knows why he's doing that? But the point is, of course, is to connect all these dots. We were talking about Muhammad, early Islamic conquest, and so forth. You fast forward almost 1,400 years, now you have this little African boy doing that. But the fact is, all around the Islamic world, there's attacks on the cross and on people who wear the cross. And oftentimes it's murderous. People actually get killed. And I can give you some anecdotes. I remember in Egypt, for example, a Coptic Christian woman, who was parking her car by a church and to take medicine to an elderly woman, was identified by rioting Muslim Brotherhood members and supporters on that day by her cross, the cross in her car. And they immediately jumped on her car. They destroyed the car. They pulled her out. They abused her. They tore her clothes off, and they essentially killed her. They killed her in the end. And even the Coptic Church issued a statement saying she's a martyr of the cross. And, just sticking in Egypt, you have more of these stories. There's another couple of years earlier, a Coptic boy who had a cross. You may be familiar with Copts sometimes wear a wrist tattoo, cross tattoo on the wrist, and his Muslim teacher told him to cover it up. And the student actually was brave enough to not only not cover it up, but he produced his pectoral cross, the chain around his neck. And the teacher went crazy, and so did some of the students, and they attacked him, and they killed him. These types of stories are in Indonesia. A woman, Indonesia, of course, we're told is a moderate Islamic nation, but a woman who was a Christian, and there are minorities there, because of her cross, she was identified as a Christian, and a man actually started abusing her, took acid, threw it in her face, threw it down her throat. Her esophagus was ruined. Her face is currently disfigured. She ended up surviving it. But all that, again, because of the cross. So it's definitely, this isn't an aberration, that issue of the African boy in Italy. This is something that goes way back throughout history. Starts with Muhammad, just like all of Islam's hostilities and intolerances begin with Muhammad's. And it's just littered all throughout history, and it's happening now, all including, as we were seeing, in Europe.
Wow. Well, that is incredible. In your one of your recent articles, you mentioned the conditions of Omar. Can you share about that?
Sure. The conditions of Omar, also known by various other names like the Pact of Omar or the Stipulations of Omar, it's basically a text, it's a medieval text that, Muslims attribute to the second caliph, Omar, one of the righteous caliphs. History has a different story. Some believe this is just a counterfeit, whatever. But Islamic tradition says it was written by Omar, and as such, it's codified in the Islamic Sharia worldview. And what the text basically is, it's like a pact made with Christians who were conquered under Omar's reign, right around 640 or so. And some believe it was actually Christians in Jerusalem, others say it's in Syria. Either way, the pact is basically, the Christians have to agree to a number of stipulations in order to not be killed. And so among these are They can't build a church. They can't even renovate the old ones. They have to wait until the old ones collapse. They can't produce a cross, such as putting a cross on the dome of a church, or even wearing a cross, as we were discussing. They can't have a Bible out in public. They can't talk to to Muslims about Christianity. They can't insult Islam or its prophet. They have to get out of their seats if a Muslim wants it, and any number of other humiliations and debilitations. So this is the conditions of Omar, and this is very much, this idea is grounded and tied to Quran 929, which calls on Muslims to fight the people of the book, that is Christians and Jews primarily, until they pay jizya, which is tribute, and live under humiliation and subjugation, according to the Arabic text. So this is how it's laid out by all these stipulations I discussed. And this is what the Islamic State, for example, is doing when you hear that they're taking jizya or extortion money, and they're telling Christians, destroying churches and so forth, breaking crosses. I saw a video that the Islamic State released, and it's about 2 minutes long. All it is just clips of Muslims destroying churches, breaking crosses, breaking Mary, Jesus statues, and so forth. So all this is in accord with the conditions of Omar, and they're coming back, even though they were actually in the colonial era. The European powers had intervened in much of the Muslim world, which at that time was weakened, and the colonial powers actually had the Muslim empires, including the Ottoman Turks, to basically abolish these laws and the jizya. But now, as Islam gets stronger and Islam comes back, it's only natural to see things like the conditions of Omar return as well.
Wow. Nothing like Islamic tolerance. Of course, I'm being sarcastic. That is incredible intolerance. But they even, if I understand this correctly, there's also intolerance for the cross. And I did say intolerance, listeners. In cemeteries, they can't even bear to see it in a cemetery. Is that correct?
Well, that's just it. You know, I mean, as I was pointing out, some Christians who wear crosses get killed for it. And then they get killed again in the tombs because, you know, they have a tombstone or a cross above them, and that gets desecrated and destroyed. A few years back, after, you know, Libya was liberated in the name of the Arab Spring, we started seeing all sorts of attacks on Christian symbols, and one of them was a video surfaced of a Christian cemetery in Libya, and all these Muslims are going around destroying it, videotaping it, laughing, screaming Allah Akbar, saying things like break the cross of the Christian dogs, and they break the crosses. And, you fast forward to today or a couple months ago, the Islamic State also issued their own video doing the same exact thing. All the Christian cemeteries that are under their jurisdiction now, Mosul and so forth, they're destroying the crosses, they're destroying, you know, the tombstones. And it's just this particular scene happens so frequently. Most recently, I remember in France, just a few months ago, a Muslim man, went on a cross-destroying spree in a Christian cemetery in France. And when they finally arrested him, you know, they said, according to the reports, he was drooling and mumbling Quranic verses. And so, of course,
that
the French
about
concluded
right.
that, yeah, but to the French, they concluded that he's just mentally unstable and they don't know why he did that. And so they're trying to figure out, you know, what's wrong with him and sending him to a hospital. But this thing, you know, destroying Christian cemeteries, I've seen it happen in Iran, it happens in sub-Saharan Africa, it happens all throughout, and we just saw in France, even in Europe now it's happening. So it's, you know, it's just very eye-opening to those who have an eye to see with, and it's really indicative of the innate hostility that Islam holds for Christianity and all other infidels, quote-unquote.
Yeah, incredible. I think that, Raymond, one of our biggest problems that we have in the West is how groups like CARE and the left turn exposing the truth about Islam into some faux accusations of Islamophobia, and I think we have a huge problem with this in academia. Raymond, you've had some experience with this in the past as a grad student. Is that correct?
Yeah, I did. I went to Georgetown University for a time in Washington, D.C. I also went to Catholic University for a time, and I also worked at the Library of Congress's African and Middle Eastern division, specifically in the Near East section, or the Middle Eastern section, which was, of course, full of academic types and scholarly types. So, yes, I'm very well acquainted with the academic approach to Islam, and in many ways I would argue it is the root source of all our problems, because it just disseminates ideas that have nothing to do with reality. What we're talking about right now, all of that would be ignored and whitewashed. It would be dismissed as just the actions of some weird extremists who don't understand the true nature of Islam and so forth. But, you know, if, for someone like me who has studied the history and the doctrines of Islam, that's all bunk what they're saying. But they do this, and they speak with authority, and they have prestigious positions. And so the average person, including media, journalists, turn to them, and then they get a bunch of nonsense that just really is not true. And I'm thinking of, in Georgetown, for example, there's the infamous John Esposito, who I didn't know at the time, and who I think is the director of something called the Muslim-Christian Center of Understanding, or something like that, which is all funded by Saudi Wahhabis.
Right.
And this man, just to give you one example, the jizya, which is, again, part of Quran 929, which Muslims are to collect from Christians and Jews, and it's extortion money, basically. And it's even Muslims will refer to it in the text as it's protection money. So the Christian or the Jew has to pay jizya in order to protect himself from who? From Muslims, because it's extortion money. So John Esposito writes that, he writes this glowing piece about jizya, about how actually it shows how tolerant and wonderful Islam was. And then he says the money was actually collected to buy protection against outside aggressors. So supposedly Christians are paying Muslims jizya so the Muslims can protect them against some phantom oppressor who comes from the outside, whoever that is. I don't know who they have in mind, other Christians. So that's all nonsense. Yeah, I mean, all that is a lie. It's not even an exaggeration. It's just a lie. Same thing with people like Karen Armstrong, you know, who's just, all, her claim to fame is she's a former nun who turned hostile against Christianity and all of a sudden became the spokeswoman for Islam and how great Islam is. And her books are sold, are so widely sold. But if you look at them, you know, it's just, and it's, you know, she's purportedly writing about history. And it just is, it's all nonsense. She makes statements like that, you know, that it was at the time of the Crusades that Christians came up with the idea that Islam was a violent religion. And they did that to justify their own way of attacking. And yet she ignores about 500 years of Islam conquering Christian land, taking Christians' land, raping the people, slaughtering them in the name of Islam. So all that 500 years is ignored, and she just starts with the Crusades as being the root source of all the problems. And these books by these academics, she's not an academic, but she's treated as one, but by this group of apologists are so widespread. And that's why, you know, your average media journalist or person watching TV is just going to buy what they say. And yet, in reality, it's not just exaggerations or whitewash. In the end, it's just straight false and lies, straight up lies.
Yeah, lies. Incredible. Those two are incredible, useful idiots. You know, I don't even know what to say about them. But, you know, we have a few more minutes, and I really would love for you to share about, you made a great analogy between Nazism and Islam. Would you share that with the listeners?
Sure, Audrey. The point I'm trying to make is one of the greatest apologetics for Islam goes like this. People will tell you, if Islam is as violent and as tolerant as you say it is, how come all of the 1.5 billion Muslims are not jihadis or are not doing this? And then you'll get the occasional, I know a good Muslim, and, you know, or you know, surely he's not just lying, maybe he really is a good Muslim, and so forth. So the analogy is, if we can say Nazism was a supremacist ideology that led to atrocities and so forth. And so we know Nazism is a bad thing, but we also know historically that there were people who were Nazis, formal Nazis, who actually did good things and saved Jews and so forth. So, for example, Schindler, Arthur Schindler of the famous movie Schindler's List. He was an ethnic German. He was part of the Nazi party, and he ended up actually helping save Jews from being killed. So would you say he did that because he was following a moderate form of Nazism? Or did he do that because his humanity basically transcended these teachings and he wouldn't follow them? So I would argue the latter. And I think that's the paradigm we should see Islam with when it comes to this idea of, you know, not all Muslims are doing it. Islam is a supremacist creed, just like Nazism. Nazism is racial. Islam is religious supremacism. You know, it's black and white. It's in the history. It's in the doctrines. We see it every day happening and so forth. Now, are all Muslims doing that? No, they're not. But is it because they're following a moderate form of Islam? Well, that's what they'll tell you. But no, it's really because they're not following true Islam. And you have a lot of people like this, especially in Islam, because in Islam, you have no choice in the matter. You're born into Islam, and that's it. You can't leave it. You try to leave it, you could get killed because they have the apostasy penalty. So there is definitely a lot of Muslims out there who are really Muslim in name only, who know very little about the religion and so forth. But that is not a reflection on Islam any more than saying a guy like Schindler is a reflection on Nazism. Nazism is what it is, and he just happened to be a member for whatever reasons, but he didn't follow through. And so you have the same thing with Muslims. Islam is what it is, but there are Muslims who, for whatever reasons, their hearts are not into it, are not following it. But that's not and the problem is today we insist that because there are those Muslims, that is a reflection on how good Islam is. But again, you know, you look at the flip side of that. Would you say because of people like Schindler that means Nazism wasn't so bad after all? Of course, right. You wouldn't say that. No one would say that. But the problem is we're not able to just, you know, take that paradigm and use it in Islam and understand, yes, it is a supremacist, violent, intolerant creed. No, that doesn't mean every single human being who's associated with it will do it, just like every single Christian or every single Jew doesn't follow the letter of their religion, obviously.
Right.
So I would hope people start to understand that, you know, we're talking about an ideology. It is what it is. And, you know, any actions by any Muslim that may be decent is not reflective of it any more than any good actions by any German and Nazi German is not reflective of Nazism.
Right, exactly. And what some listeners may not, well, maybe most listeners may not realize is that Hitler had an affinity for, or great interest, if not love for, you know, the ideology of Islam. Do you think that might be because they were both totalitarian systems?
Yeah, well, Hitler actually praised Muhammad for being a warlike prophet, you know, who, you know, just like Hitler condemned Jesus and Christianity for being too passive, he liked in Muhammad that basically he was a warlord. So they definitely have that in common, you know, the spreading their ideology by force, the supremacism that's innate in it, and so forth. So, yeah, definitely Hitler and people like Nietzsche and other, you know, philosophers who were for, you know, a more robust, quote-unquote, aggressive approach to life always thought Islam was onto something.
Sure. And if I'm correct, didn't he consult the Mufti,
Grand Mufti of Jerusalem.
Yeah, for the final solution?
Yeah.
It seems as though ISIS and their ilk we know Iran, are trying to finish the job, sadly.
Absolutely.
Yeah, oh gosh. You know, and that, what I was going to tell the listeners is that you should be checking out, if you're not, you better start doing it, RaymondIbrahim.com, where all of Raymond's articles are. And I was going to just ask you, where can the listeners follow and support your excellent work and purchase your books?
Well, thanks, Audrey. Like you said, my website, RaymondIbrahim.com, has all my articles, and there's also links to Amazon for my books, and there's also a donate button, so we'd be grateful for a donation as well to help keep the site going.
Yes, did you hear that, listeners? I would like you to do that. There is a donate button to keep the site. The work on there is incredible. Not just the articles, but you also have, you keep up to date. You have a log going, and it's sad that you have to do that. But as a matter of fact, you just posted one for April, in order to get all the numbers in, of the Christian persecution around the world. Am I correct?
Yeah, I compile a report every month about the persecution of Christians under Islam, and I started it in 2011. I remember when I started it, I was concerned that, you know, how am I going to produce a report every single month? What if there is a gap in persecution 1 month? What am I going to do? But unfortunately, it's actually from day one, every report gets longer and longer and more comprehensive. So this last one, which is as succinct as I can possibly make it, I just use, you know, the bare minimum words to try to relay what's going on. It's, I think, about 5,000 words or like 10 pages long. And that's just 1 month. And, you know, all the preceding months since 2011 are roughly the same or a little shorter because they're getting longer, like I said.
Yeah, sadly, but it's excellent work, and it's all in one. It's like one-stop shopping. It's one stop to get this information, and that's RaymondIbrahim.com. And I'll have not only links for a link for that, but also for the books directly in my after show and all my social networks. And thanks so much, Raymond, for sharing with us. And till your next visit, may God bless you and your critical work. Bye for now.
Thanks very much, Audrey. Take care.
Thank you.